Okay, tonight is Tuesday night, April 17th, Leil Yom HaZikaron. This is the women's Mishneh Gemara Shir. We're learning Maseches Chulin, and we're resuming on Daf Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Bet. Okay, Rabotai. We're going to begin going back to Maseches Chulin. And we're going to see a sugya, which is identified as what's called a shas sugya. Means you'll find it all over the place in a variety of different situations and locations. And we'll have a chance to analyze it and see what's happening in this particular sugya. The name of the sugya is Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. You can't have compounding isurim. Actually, it's a machloik, is whether you can or you can't, and what are the parameters of such a discussion. So we're starting in the second bracketed section, which is five lines from the bottom of the page on Kuf Yud Gimel Amud Beis, in the perek which we are studying. And the Gemara says, Itmar, we have learned, HaMevashel Chelev B'Chalav. HaMevashel Chelev B'Chalav. Somebody took fat, which is prohibited fat, which you're not allowed to eat, and he cooked it with milk. HaMevashel Chelev B'Chalav. Rab Ami V'Ravasi. So there is a machloikis between Rab Ami and Ravasi. Chad Omar Loke. V'Chad Omar Eino Loke. One said, you get Malkus, and the other one said, you don't get Malkus.
Say which said what?
Sometimes the Gemara doesn't know who said what. Sometimes later on the Gemara tries to figure it out. Here, right now, tonight, we just don't know which one of the two said you get lashes, and which one said you don't get lashes. So, So, can you tell me, without looking any further, when the Gemara said that one authority said you get lashes, so I'm going to ask you, you get lashes for what?
Which one? Which
one? What, so, what are the possibilities here?
Eating the
chayav. So, you could say you get lashes for basa b'chalav. You could get lashes as well for eating chelev, something that's prohibited. And if you ate it, if you cooked it, which you did, you could get lashes for cooking as well. For cooking, for eating basa b'chalav, and eating chelev. So we don't know yet what the authority who said that you get lashes, we don't know yet what are you getting lashes for. All the Gemara knows is that one said you get lashes and one said you don't get lashes. So the Gemara is going to make a suggestion. Lema, let us suggest, Baha Kamiflagi, that the Machloikis revolves around the following. Demanda Omar Loke Kasavar Isur Chal Al Isur. The Gemara here is operating on the assumption that I'm going to read the words carefully of the case. What did the Gemara say he did with the chelev? Good. Did he eat any of it?
No.
Doesn't say any of it. Good. So we are going to focus right now only on one thing. Will you get lashes for cooking basa b'chalav? So one opinion says you will get Malkus because you believe that Isur Chal Al Isur. One Isur can apply to something that is already Asur. The Chelev is already Asur without anything. Now that you cooked it with milk, the Isur of Basar B'Chalav will be compounded on the Isur of Chelev. Okay, so you will get lashes for cooking basa b'chalav. Uman de amar eino loke, And the one of the two, either Ami or Asi, who said that you don't get lashes, Kasavar ein isur chal al isur. That one prohibition cannot be compounded upon another prohibition. If this item is already prohibited, the chaylev is already prohibited, before you started cooking it with the milk, no further isurim can be compounded onto this piece of meat. In this case, this piece of fat.
That nullifies the first isur also?
No.
It's already
usur. It's already usur. You're not allowed to eat chaylev. It's under the penalty. It's already a davar ha'asur.
Yeah.
So if you had cooked something that is asur already, meat which is asur already, and you cooked it with milk, the prohibition of cooking milk and meat cannot be applied to this piece of fat because of the rule. Ein isur chal al isur.
What happens with the first isur?
What's the first isur? That's the chaylev. There's no isur in cooking chaylev. You're allowed to, you're just not allowed to eat it. But you're allowed to cook chaylev with anything you want. I can cook chaylev with vegetables. I won't be able to eat the vegetables. But you don't get a punishment for cooking something prohibited. If I cook nevela, trefa, nothing happens. Right. I ruin my pots.
Maybe making glue out of it. I mean, you may not be doing it for the.
That's fine. But by basa b'chalav, you can't cook it.
Are you looking at hanaf from treif stuff?
Yes.
You are?
It many for nevela and trefa, you're allowed to derive hanaf. The Torah itself says, Lager asher bisharecha titnena va'achala, o machur l'nachri. You can give it to your Gentile friend, or you can sell it to a Gentile. Torah says itself.
You can't get hanok,
right? Yeah. That you can't get hanok, right?
That is correct. You can't get hanok from basa b'chalav.
Right.
So here is going to be the test case. Great grandma. Here's going to be the test case.
I got a new name now.
That's
really?
Here goes the test case. The test case. If I cook this piece of chaylev with milk, and I do not apply the prohibition of basa b'chalav, okay? Because ein isur chalal isur, the isur of basa b'chalav cannot be compounded upon something that is already prohibited because it's chaylev.
But it's not because I'm not eating it.
Are you allowed to cook it?
Yes.
You're allowed to cook chaylev with vegetables, but are you allowed to cook chaylev with milk?
It shouldn't matter.
So I understand. So one opinion said that if you cook it with milk, the second prohibition of cooking meat and milk will apply to this piece of chaylev. So this piece of chaylev is now asa for two reasons. It's chaylev. Two, it's us. It's basa b'chalav. So if I wanted to sell this piece of meat now, this piece of fat that has been cooked in milk, according to the first opinion, can you? Of course not. Because it's usur for two reasons. Because I believe the first opinion held, isur chal al isur. Let me just explain. The second opinion says, ein isur chal al isur. Once something is usur, no further prohibitions can be compounded upon it. So when I cook chaylev with chalav, will it become asur because I cooked it with milk? No. What will be the only reason why I can't eat this piece of meat? Because it's chaylev. Are you allowed to sell chaylev?
Yes.
The answer was yes.
Okay, but there's a big but here. We're talking about only tivashel and not eating. So one second.
That's the case.
But if I'm making glue that's made out of chaylev and milk.
Right.
Okay, and I'm making it for glue.
Good.
So the first part of cooking the chaylev, I didn't do anything. There's no isser yet.
Who said so? If, according to the first opinion, there is.
No, it's not for anybody. I'm allowed to put chaylev to make glue.
But not with milk, according to the first opinion.
That's the second one. You said you can't add it on top of
that. That's the second opinion.
Yeah.
The first opinion said You can.
I understand that.
So once I cooked the chalev in chalav, okay, and I will get lashes for cooking milk and meat, will you then be able to use it for glue? Tell me what's the answer.
No.
The answer is no, of course not. Because once it's basar b'chalav, it becomes asur b'hana'ah. Not only in achila.
So you're not allowed to make glue out of the chalev and
according to the second opinion. According to the first opinion, you cannot. Because the first opinion believes that even though this chalev is asur already, I can compound a second isur on this chalev by cooking it with milk. Yes?
And it's asur to eat. It's not the first isur on the chalev.
Is asur to eat.
Right.
The second one, you can't eat it for two reasons.
Stop with the first one.
Okay.
We're not eating it. We're cooking it.
Good. But what creates the prohibition about cooking the chalev? The fact that you cooked it with what?
But that's still only one isur.
But that's one isur. That's not two. You didn't have two there.
You have a second isur after you didn't cook it with orange juice. If you cooked it with orange juice, nobody's coming to share tonight. There's nothing to talk about.
No, we get the second.
Well,
no, the
second.
First one is just chalev has an isur.
Chalev is natural.
It's a natural.
You're not allowed to eat chalev.
Right.
Good. Chalev is, soon as the animal is born, it is born with prohibited chalev. Good. I now take out that chalev. I'm not allowed to eat it.
Right.
If I were to cook it with orange juice, I'm going to Gan Eden. The problem is, I didn't cook it with orange juice. I cooked it with milk.
But that's just one isur.
What? That's a second isur that is applied to this. Because it's basar b'chalav.
I understand that.
I think it's just
forget about the first case. Just take the second case. Within the second case of cooking chalav with milk,
right,
you have two isurim. You have the chilav that's asur?
Not if you're not eating
it. No, but it's a davar ha'asur.
It's a davar.
What happens if I eat this piece of chalav that was cooked with chalav?
Then you're over two.
How many lashes will I get?
If you eat it.
80. One set of lashes because I ate chalav, and another set of lashes that I ate basar b'chalav. But
if you don't do it,
that's not the case here. We're talking about if you should have done that.
No, but it says to Moshele is here, and I told him.
So that's why that's why I'm not worried about 80 lashes. I'm worried about 40 lashes. Will you get 40 lashes for cooking basar b'chalav with something where the basar was already previously up?
So I think the question, the problem is, what do you mean by isur on top of an isur? So it might just be a category.
Right.
This is an isur category, and you're using another isur category. It's just an isur category.
It already has an isur attached to it.
It's just the category, and it's the category.
It has an isur attached to it.
Okay.
It's called chalev. So now if I cook it with milk, can I create a second isur attached to it? That's the machloikis. Ravami said you get lashes. One of them. Let's say Ravami said you get lashes. The other one said you don't get lashes. So the Gemara is introducing a potential way of explaining the machloikis. If you believe that philosophically you cannot ever compound one isur upon another isur, the only thing that this piece of fact will ever remain is isur chalev. It can't become basar b'chalav if you cook it 1,000 times. Therefore, you get only one set of lashes for cooking basar b'chalav. If 5 minutes later you decided to eat it, you will get 80 lashes. One for eating chalev, one for eating basar b'chalav. If after that you're going to sell it, you will violate another set of lashes because you had hanah. But if you hold that you cannot compound one upon the other, all this piece of chalev will ever be called until eternity is chalev, nothing else. So if I cook it, nothing has happened to me. I will not get lashes because you're allowed to cook chalev. Make believe basar b'chalav doesn't exist. If I eat it, I'll only get one set of lashes because I ate chalev. If I sell it, nothing will happen because I'm allowed to sell chaylev.
Can I ask another question?
Sure.
I'm not, this may be a silly question, but when we talk about two items that are usually permissible.
Yes.
Correct? So is there any, the chaylev, it almost is not basar b'chalav because it doesn't have the integrity of a kosher piece.
Excellent.
So would that make a difference?
That might make a difference and say that maybe basar b'chalav is an exception to the rule. Right. That's excellent. We'll get to it, probably not this week, but we will get to it. So the Gemara here introduces for us whether we can compound Isurim on top of one another. So the Gemara knows that it's a machloikis. I want to show you, before we continue it all, I want to show you a couple of other cases where this is applied.
Don't you have this idea that we can't have an ownership on an onesh? We want to.
No.
Can we learn something in terms of?
I don't remember that.
Okay. The thing about if you were chay of misa, you also chay of something else.
That's something else. Yeah, that's a very famous rule.
So what is that called?
That's called either. It's called 1 second. Kamlei b'derabba mine. Kamlei b'derabba mine. Whoa, whoa, whoa. That's the way the song was taught in Babylonia. Downtown. That's the way it was taught. Except Rabbi Jackley has a different one, and I almost fired him because he didn't use my melody.
That's
unrelated. That's where Beis Din has to issue two punishments which resulted out of one action, so you only get the more severe one. Yeah. Turn to page 6 for a moment. Page 6, the last page in the packet. And look at the bracketed line, which is a Gemara in Kedushin. Here is the halacha. In 3 weeks, we will read Parshat Emor. The first topic in Parshat Emor.
Hello? Sorry for interrupting. Just collecting tzedakah, our soup kitchen. Have a couple of cents, maybe.
But it's the middle of the shir.
Yeah,
it's not the right thing to do.
No. Okay, no problem.
Yeah.
Next.
So the Torah enumerates that which a Kohen is not permitted to marry. Who are the marital restrictions against a Kohen? So the Torah tells us in Vayikra chapter 21, Isha, Zona, V'chalala, Ugrusha, she's not permitted to marry. She's not permitted to marry a Zona, Grusha, Chalala, she's not permitted to marry.
He
is not permitted to marry. Correct. Kohen Gadol also has one else, a widow.
Right.
Not permitted to marry a widow. So the Gemara talks about somebody who became all four. One woman became all four. So here is the case. Zinsa, this very nice woman, had relations with any person she is not permitted to have relations with. That classifies her as a zona. A zona in biblical Hebrew does not mean a prostitute. It's got nothing to do with prostitution. It means she had relations with a person who she was not permitted to have relations with. Under any circumstance. That identifies her as a zona. Okay. Then she Nitchalala. How did she become a chalala? After what? After having this relationship with this person,
she married
a kohen. That makes her a chalala. Because it makes her a child also a chalala or a chalala.
She could be the child of someone.
She could be the child too. Then she got divorced from this kohen. Vinit Garsha.
She's a real gem.
Oh, yes. Then she married somebody else and became a widow. So all four prohibitions happened to this woman, and now a Kohen Gadol wants to marry her. So what question do you think the Gemara is going to deal with? How many prohibitions will this Kohen Gadol have violated with this one woman? Will he get lashes because he had relations with a Zona? Will he get lashes a second time because he had relations with a Chalola? Will he get lashes because he had relations with a Grusha? Will he get lashes because he had an Almana?
Will they let him be the Kohen
Gadol? What?
Of
course not. Of course not, if they find out. But he's trying to keep it quiet.
It's one experience.
That's all.
Right. It's all one thing.
Okay, so the Gemara uses this. Says the Gemara, Eino Chayav Ela Achat. The Kohen Gadol will only get one set of lashes by having relations with this woman. Which one will it be? Because she's a Zona. Because that was the first created prohibition for her. So the fact that she got divorced and a Kohen Gadol makes no difference. He will not be subject to punishment because he tried to marry a Grusha.
The punishment's the same for all of them?
Just a lav. Exactly. It's lashes. So in this case, the Kayin will only get 39 lashes, and that's it. Even though he violated, in theory, four separate prohibitions. But this Gemara is according to the opinion who holds, which is the majority opinion throughout Shas, of Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. Something that is prohibited cannot have multiple prohibitions compounding onto this woman. If she is already a Zona, she can't be held liable for being a Grusha. If she's a Grusha, she can't be held Chalala. If she's a Chalala, can't be held accountable that she is an Almana if it was a Kohen Gadol. So that's a second area where we apply the law of Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. That's what this Gemara assumes in Maseches Kedusha. In Maseches Kedusha. And I just wanted to show it to you, where that applies. Mm-hmm. And I'll show you another one. Show you another one.
Could I ask?
Yes, of course you can ask. Yes. She became an almana. Armala is Aramaic for almana.
Thank you.
In fact, if somebody marries a widow, the ketubah says armeluta instead of besulta da. It's armeluta da. She is a widow. Her ketubah is only half that of a betulah. Good. I'll give you a third example. Go to page number 5. The Mishnah here is talking about Din HaNasheh. That's the name of the parak. And Daf Kuf Amud Aleph in Maseches Chulin. Says the Mishnah, Noheg Bitehora Ve'eno Noheg Bitemeah. We just read Parsha Shmini last Shabbos. So, Parsha Shmini, Parshmini. So at the end of Parshmini, chapter Yud Aleph, the Torah describes kosher animals as tehorim, and non-kosher animals as tamehu lachem. Tamehu lachem. So the Mishnah says, the prohibition of gid hanasheh, which we are not permitted to eat, only applies in a kosher animal. Noheg bitahara, bitahora. Ve'eino noheg bitmeah. The prohibition against eating the gid hanasheh does not apply if the animal is not kosher. Why do you think it doesn't apply? Because it's already a non-kosher animal. So once you have an animal that already has assumed some form of Isur, a second prohibition, according to the first opinion, which is Rabbi Shimon's opinion, it can't apply. Rabbi Huda Omer, Af Bitmeya. Rabbi Huda is always of the opinion that Isur Chal Al Isur. You can compound one prohibition upon the next. You can do so. And as a result, he believes that when you will eat the gin hanasheh of this non-kosher animal, so under those circumstances, you'll get two lashes. One for eating al-kein lo yochlu b'nei yisor at gin hanasheh, and for eating whatever non-kosher animal you decided to eat. For eating pig or camel or something of that nature, not permitted to eat it. Fine. And Rabbi Shimon is the author of the opinion that that it only applies to a kosher animal. And in fact, here's just an historical fact. Who edited the Mishnah? You well know who did that. That's Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi. Now Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi could have said Rabbi Shimon Omer, Noheg b'tahorah ve'eino noheg b'tmeyah. But he didn't. Because that would lead you to the impression, it's only machlok is one guy against the next. The way Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi conveys to us that the consensus of opinion is with Rabbi Shimon is that he leaves his name out. It could be lots of people who said that opinion. The consensus, the majority of Tanaim agree with the first person, and therefore he names it nameless. He lets it go nameless. By design, Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi knew the name of the author who held that Isur Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. But in order to convey to us that Rabbi Shimon is accepted lahalacha by virtue of the fact that he is supported by the overwhelming majority of Tanaitic sources. So Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi conveys this to us ever so smartly by just writing, Noheg b'tahorah ve'eino b'tmeyah. Rabbi Yehuda disagrees. He's in the minority. He's in the minority.
But doesn't that make it a
Stam
Mishnah?
No, a Stam Mishnah is no name at all.
In the whole thing?
In the entire Mishnah. That's a Stam Mishnah. The author of the Stam Mishnah is Rabbi Meir.
Right.
That's what we believe. Now Rabbi Meir authored any Mishnah where there is no name to it. Rabbi Meir. Here is Rabbi Huda talking. And we know it's Rabbi Shimon.
Is this a similar example if you ate treif on Yom Kippur?
Oh, we're going to talk about that. Yes. Yes. Excellent point. If you eat Treifa, Nevela, meat on Yom Kippur, how many prohibitions do you violate? And the question will be, which one comes... We're going to talk about that. How do I know which of the two to assume is the first so that none are compounded? So we will see one of the guidelines is the one that is in existence first. So if it's treifa, when does an animal become treifa?
When it's born.
When it's born. It doesn't become treifa on Yom Kippur. So if I eat treifa meat on Yom Kippur, at least for today's discussion, because there are three major exceptions to the rule. When we do say Isur will be compounded. Three different cases, which we probably won't get to tonight. But there are three different types of cases where one Isur will be, Yom Kippur might be one of them. But for tonight's discussion, Yom Kippur is a perfect illustration. Which one will be identified as first? The treifa. Because the animal was born a treifa. Now comes Yom Kippur, you know I'd eat it for two reasons. Number one, it's a treifa. Number two, it's Yom Kippur. So you know what I will be held in my book upstairs, I ate treifa. The difference is, for eating on treifa, all you do is get lashes.
Yeah.
Feeding on Yom Kippur, there's no kares. For eating on Yom Kippur, there's kares. You will be spared the kares if you hold Ein Isur Chal Al Isur.
Which one comes first is
kind of
crucial there.
That is correct. That is correct. So now, I'm going to give you a very simple test. Take a question in a second.
What did you just say? You had E on your
kippah. One second. I just give you a second. Simple case. I slaughtered an animal on Yom Kippur.
It's not the same.
And it was not a good shechita. Which of the two, will I be held accountable for if I eat the meat of this animal?
Yom Kippur.
Why?
Because you're not allowed to. No, because when you slaughtered, it was the first thing you did wrong.
It was kosher.
No, because you broke.
But in terms of eating, I'm talking about eating.
Oh, the eating.
The eating. I'm not. Of course, you're going to you'll violate the law of shechting on Yom Kippur.
Yeah.
But in terms of eating, will I be violating Isur Nevela or of Isur eating on Yom Kippur?
Okay, first,
good. When does an animal become nevela?
When
you messed up the shechita.
Right.
That was on Yom Kippur. So in this case,
Yom Kippur came first.
The Isur Yom Kippur started last night.
Mm-hmm.
I took out my shochet's knife today and I made it into nevela. Now I eat it. I am violating the law of eating Yom Kippur, but I am not violating the law of eating nevela. So I only have one less thing to do tshuva for at the end of the day when I go to Dav Nila. I don't have to say if I hold Eini Suchal Alisa, at least for today. Yes.
Is there an example of where they happen simultaneously? That's what I'm trying to think of.
Yes.
There must be.
Yes.
What is it?
The case of the Din Anasha and the non-kosher animal.
Not the Yom Kippur case.
No, that's for sure not.
An animal that is born as a non-kosher animal and its Gid HaNasheh are created at the same time. So how do I know? Okay, that's a good question. That's an excellent case. The Gemara will try to deal with that. We're not going to read that now. But that's an excellent case about the Gid HaNasheh. How do I know which of the two it is? Yes.
Is there any differentiation, let's say, if the punishment is malchus, or you have to bring a korban, or it's a karet, like you said, or something?
Okay,
like that.
So some are going to say that there are actually four exceptions to the rule, and one of them is when it's an isur chamur, a more severe offense, exactly your illustration. La halacha, we're going to reject that, and there are only going to be three exceptions. But there will be some discussion about it, because Yom Kippur is an Isur Chamur. It has a prohibition that its eating is with that penalty with Kares. But that's going to be a minority opinion. It's a very good case, but it's a minority opinion. We reject it, Lahalakha. There are only three exceptions, but I'm not ready for the exceptions yet. Not ready for the exceptions. So, the Gemara actually proposes... Go back to the first page. And Samuel, Shmuel, on the first bracketed line of this page, forget about what Shmuel said before. Forget about it. Shmuel said something which generated an opinion that Shmuel holds Isur Chal Al Isur. Asks the Gemara, V'savar Shmuel Isur Chal Al Isur? You mean to tell me Shmuel is of the opinion that one prohibition can combine upon another? What are you ripped? The Ha'amar Shmuel Mishum Rabbi Eleazar. Shmuel said the name Rabbi Eleazar. Minayin lekohen tamei sheachal truma tameya sheeno b'misa. How do I know that a kohen who is spiritually impure, who eats truma which is spiritually impure, sheeno b'mita, how do I know that he does not have to be executed by heaven? It's Misa Bidei Shamayim, what we call Shene Emar, because the Pasuk states in Parshat Emor, Umeitu bo ki yichalelu. He shall die based on the fact that he desecrated his kahuna. How did he desecrate his kahuna? What's the normal case? He was tamei and he ate holy kachin. That was kosher. Regular meat that was tahar. And he ate it. By eating it, he desecrated what? He desecrated the kahuna. Prat, with the exception, lizu shemichulelet veomedet. This piece of meat is already michulal, because what status did this piece of meat have? It was tameh. So a kohen who is tameh, who eats kachim or truma that is already tameh, is spared the death penalty. Why do we assume he's spared the death penalty? Because ein isur chal al isur. So the Gemara here brings a pasuk and a midrash halacha, a drash based on the pasuk, to establish the premise that ein isur chal al isur. And that makes it very difficult for us to assume why others hold isur chal al isur. Because, well, they have a right to, because midrash halacha are all Tanaim. Those are the ones who write, who make up these, or quote these midrash halacha. So another Tana can say, I don't agree with your drash. But here the Gemara assumes that that isur, ein isur chal al isur, as a result of the fact that the Torah says, umesu bo ki yichaleluhu, the Gemara darshins, prat lemechulelet ve'omedet. It's already disgraced, it's already been tamei. Kohen, who is tamei, eats it. Under those circumstances, he can't be chayav misa. And that's something that Kohanim, you know, really had to be very careful about. And in fact, the Gemara, in trying to illustrate how during Bayit Sheni, people were well versed in halacha, the illustration they always give is midan ad be'er sheva. Even little babies knew all of the laws of tum and tahara, because so many things depended on. You had truma in your house that you were going to give to a kohen. You had masa sheni that you were going to bring to Yerushalayim and eat it, and it became tameh. You can't eat it. What do you do with it? So people really had to be aware of the laws of tum and tahara. That's why archaeologists have found so many mikvaot in, you know, the old city and all over the place. Tons of places, especially in the old city, based on the fact that tum and tahara played a major role. Now, there is a machloikis, how to understand the machloikis between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Okay? There's going to be a machloikis as to how to understand what are the relative positions of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon. Most believe that when Rabbi Shimon said Ein Isur Chal Al Isur, he meant literally Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. So what does that mean? There are two consequences for that statement. A, I don't get a second set of lashes. And number two, I don't have to do tshuva. I don't have to do tshuva for something that technically I didn't violate. HaKadosh Baruch Hu may not give you, the Gabbai might not give you shishi that Shabbos if he knows that you ate something for which technically the halacha said you didn't violate. But opinion number one says, when Rabbi Shimon said Ein Isur Chal Al Isur, he meant it completely. The second Isur is totally removed from your accountability.
He didn't say Ein Onesh.
It's not only in Onesh. Mm-hmm. It's completely gone.
It's as if you didn't do it.
That's correct.
That's bizarre.
A second opinion.
That's bizarre.
Good. A second opinion says, now that's ridiculous. It's bizarre, as you just said. So we'll use your words. It only means that you don't get a second set of lashes. Ein isur chal al isur for punishment purposes.
That makes sense.
But the lav is recorded in your checkbook upstairs, in your record book. It says that you ate chaylev and you ate basa b'chalav. You ate basa b'chalav. It's just that we won't give you lashes for eating basa b'chalav. But the lav, you did violate in that case. If the Kohen married this one woman who was a Zona and a Gerusha and so on and so forth, so you won't get four sets of lashes, but four demerits will be recorded on his ledger upstairs in heaven. That's the second opinion about Rabbi Shimon. So one opinion about Rabbi Shimon means you're scot-free. Ein isur chal al isur means you are a free bird. The other one says, not so fast. You're not a free bird. What happens is that you don't get a second onesh, but the violation is still there. And it's a little analogous to what Nechama referred to in the other case. I'll give you the illustration of Kamle Bidrabim. Okay? I am standing in my backyard, and somebody is hanging their sheets in their backyard. Like, Amula Gitzat. No such thing as a dryer. You hang out your sheets to dry. And I take my bow and arrow, and I'm trying to kill, I'm going to kill somebody two houses down, but along the route it rips somebody's sheets. The question is, do I have to pay for the sheets? The answer is, I don't. Because Bet Din, which now what? Says that I have to make, Bet Din is the one who assesses all punishments. They said, you have to pay for somebody's sheets. But since they're going to kill me because I killed that guy, they don't make my my estate pay for the thing. Good. So does that mean when I get upstairs, I don't have to say to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm sorry for ruining grandma's sheets that she was hanging out in the backyard? Of course. So that's the debate. That's a similar debate. Do I say that it's only a din in Onesh? Or do we say, no, you killed somebody. We don't care what you ripped the sheets. Yes?
But beforehand you said that it goes by the first one, on page 6. Because that was the first violation.
Right.
So here, the first violation is ripping the sheets.
I understand. Here we're not discussing which one, whether you compound one on top of the other. First of all, it's not compounding because it's two different people who you're dealing with. You're dealing with the murdered victim, and you're dealing with the grandma who's hanging up the sheets. Two different people. Ein isur chal al isur is when it's on the same person or the same object. The same person was the illustration with the Kohen marrying. It's the same woman, but four prohibitions upon her. That's what Ein isur chal al isur operates with.
So if the sheets belong to the person who also got killed by the arrow, so it's now the same person.
But again, it's a different. So then maybe yes, maybe we would have to talk about it. Perhaps. So the second opinion says that although it's an own, it's only for ownership. You don't get any sechal isa. However, he writes, does the second opinion. There are segments of a cemetery which were not allowed to be buried in for people who were multiple sinners.
Wow.
Multiple sinners. If you are a multiple sinner and you don't do tshuva, the cemetery will have only bury you on the outskirts. But you're not going to be buried with the finer mention. Not going to. And there are some cemeteries that still have this today, that they won't bury somebody who's a Mechal Shabbos,
right,
in that section. They'll say there's a separate section for Mechal Shabbos and for this and for that. So there is an opinion that says that if somebody has multiple averus. One averu we can tolerate. But if he does multiple averus and he's not going to do tshuva, that automatically disqualifies him from being buried within the mainstream section of the cemetery. So the second the person said, Ein Isur Chal Al Isur is only in terms of onesh, but he's not going to be buried in that section because he did violate two prohibitions. And the first opinion said no. Ein Isur Chal Al Isur means he never violated that second opinion. So he still is eligible to be buried in that particular section. In that particular section.
Is there any distinction between Mazid and Shogeg?
Very big difference.
No, I don't mean in, I mean in these conversations.
No. No. it's no different in terms of the status of the effect of the effect. That makes, if I cooked Nevela, if I did any of these things.
No, but like with the Kohen, so, who marries the fourth time.
Right, he just didn't know that, yeah, he was prohibited. Mm-hmm. So then we're discussing a different issue.
Oh, so this
are there multiple chataot?
Right. Uh-huh.
But in that particular case, there are no chataot.
If it's...
Because you only bring a korban chatas if had the avera been done b'mezid, there would be a death penalty, kares or mises best. But for having relations with a grusha, a koe maragushim, there's no death penalty.
And what about the eating nevela?
Nevela has chaleb, has kares. I mean, eating chaleb, so it makes a difference. Yes, mm-hmm, it does. Then it does make a difference.
Because you're not making... Oh, okay.
Yeah. If you will now turn for a second to page number 3... So the Rambam tells you what he says about this issue of Isur Chal Al Isur. Says the Rambam, Ein Isur Mishum Nevela Elaminim Tehorim Bilvat. The Isur of eating a Nevela is only prohibited with kosher species animals. Mitnei Shehein Reuyin L'Shchita. They theoretically could be slaughtered and done what? What could you do if you had a good shchita? You can eat it. The imnishchatu, if they were shchita kshera, if it was slaughtered properly, yihiyu mutarin ba'achila. Avol minin temein. But if I have a non-kosher animal, she'ein shchita mo'eles bohen, where shchita is not effective, bein shenishchata kera'uy, whether you shechted it properly, bein shemesa kidarka, or if what? It died naturally, bein shechatach basar minachai mimena, or whether or not I sliced off a piece of meat while it was still alive, the ochlo and I ate it, eino loke mishum nevela utrefa, Ela mishum ochel besar tmeya. I do not violate the laws of nevela or the laws of trefa. Only nevela, only basar tmeya, meat that is not kosher. So you'll ask the Rambam, why did you paskin this way? Because ein isur chal al isur. Once this animal was created, it was automatically a non-kosher animal. So the Isur Nevela will take effect when it dies from anything other than a kosher animal. Hence, I don't violate that prohibition. Because the Rambam is of the opinion that under ordinary circumstances, Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. That's how the Rambam paskins all over the joint. All over the joint. That's how we pass. Yeah. Yeah. Now. Yeah. I'm going to throw out the following case. Somebody had basa b'chalav, He cooked it. He ate it. And he derived benefit from it. Okay? Somebody did all three things in relationship to some type of basar b'chalav. Now, there, by basar b'chalav, you can't say ein isur chal al isur. Because the Torah explicitly wrote three times to prohibit cooking is one action, eating is a second action, hana'ah is a third action. Nice. So how many lashes should he be getting, should he have done all three? 3 times 39, right? 117. That's how many lashes you should be giving. So listen to this. Listen to this. And ask some of the old timers, ask them what Ravshatskis' first question was on every Bechina exam, every Smicha Bechina. I told this to you once. What, do you remember?
No.
Okay.
But I remember that you told us.
Okay, good.
That's a start.
So he used to ask, what is the Nekuda Nifla'a in the Rambam, in his Perush HaMishneh to Maseches Krisus? What's the Nekuda Nifla'a of the Rambam? What's the one bizarre? Nekuda is a point. Nifla'a, puzzling. Puzzling point of the Rambam, which he wrote not in Mishneh Torah, but in his commentary to the Mishneh, which he wrote when he was 18 years old, on Maseches Krisus.
Does that Nifla mean wonderful?
It could mean wonderful, but in this case it means startling. Exactly. Pele. It's startling. The Rambam writes that the Isur Hana'a of Basar B'chalav is not an independent Isur. It's a subcategory of Achila. When you eat it, right. And when you use it as a salve, you're consuming the product in a different way. If you sell it, you're getting rid of it in a different way. So the Rambam believed that there is never Malkus on Hana'ah of Basar B'chalav, because it's subsumed under the Isur of Achila. So if you're planning to get smicha one day, and you meet Ravshatskis' great-great-grandson, and he asks you this question, you'll be prepared. Was ide nekude de flaw of the Rambam Peirush HaMishneh in Maseches Krisus? Yeah. Good. So that's how the Rambam paskins of the halacha. Let me just tell you, list the three exceptions that we will analyze next week. Exception number one. If it's an Isur Mosif, if something is not just on the same level as the first Isur, but it includes something else. It includes another variation. That's why Basar B'chalav might be an exception to all of these rules. We'll see. Chelev is only prohibited, what? To be eaten. Nothing else. You're allowed to cook. You're allowed to have benefit from it. Well, we started off.
We still
off
have a problem.
Okay.
We're going to talk.
So. Okay, you can talk amongst yourselves later on. Basar B'chalav might be an Isur Mosif. What does it bring to the table? Two additional Isurim that Chalev didn't have. You're not allowed to cook Basar B'chalav, and you're not allowed to have Hana'ah from Basar B'chalav. So I'm just using that as an illustration. But an Isur Mosif, is an exception to the rule of Ein Isur Chal Al Isur. That's number one. It's called Mosif. Number two is an Isur Kolel. Kolel means that the prohibition includes a greater category of items. For example, I eat Nevela meat on Yom Kippur. what does the Isur of Nevela include? Only the Isur of Nevela. What does the Isur of eating on Yom Kippur include?
All foods.
So it's kolel yoter ma'achalim. It includes more foods in its prohibition. So that might be a separate, that is a second category. We'll see whether all of these examples impact upon what we said tonight. But that's going to be a second exception which we will discuss. That's called an Isur kolel. And the third one is an Isur bivat achat. If both prohibitions came about at the exact same time and didn't what? And one didn't precede the other. So some things that we discussed today, which one might fit into that category? Which one might fit into that category? Giranashe with a non-kosher animal. Giranashe and they're both created at the same time. As soon as animal is born, you're not allowed to eat the giranashe, you're not allowed to eat it, not like the rest of the animal, because it's not kosher. So that's called Isur Bivat Achat. Those are the three exceptions which we accept the halacha. That there we will say Isur Chal Al Isur under those circumstances. So,
could you review them again?
What? Isur Mosif, where it adds a different dimension. Isur Kolel, where it expands that which is included in the prohibition. And Isur Bivat Achat. And next week the share will be Tuesday night again, because Wednesday is NORPAC. And there are people who came, so try to come Tuesday night.
If it's announced earlier,
I will announce it this Shabbos. It'll be announced. It'll be in the brief.
Yeah.
And then in 2 weeks after that, there's the YU dinner is a Wednesday night. So I have to go to that. So I'll do that Tuesday. So I might just do the next 4 weeks straight Tuesday nights instead of going back for a week for Wednesday and back. We'll see. No?
It's not. It's a week.
Yes? Rabba means greater. The greater one. The more significant one.
Yes.
Rabba means great. Hishay Rabba. Great name of God.
I knew it was coming.
Can't believe the Rabba means.
It's
okay.
We have a table with pictures.
Thank you.